It doesn't have to be open.
Don, can I trouble you? I need to introduce you.
Thanks. Okay, Rav Osei, today we have a very profound, challenging sugya. We'll try to do the best we can. This is the kind of sugya that I would need my Rebbe's help, Rav Soloveitchik. He would be great here. Okay, so we're on Daf Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph, towards the bottom of the Amud. And let's just review what we know so far about the Mishnah and the twofold machlokes in the Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim. The first, both machlokes, as we said yesterday, is about Chazor. Can he change his mind? The first machlokes is in a case where they change the rules as far as the judges are concerned, and each litigant gives his verbal agreement that we can change the rules, we can accept a judge who's not really suitable to serve as a judge. And then he changes his mind. And we pointed out that he changes his mind before the Gemara did. Fine. The Sefer records another machlokes between the same Rabbi Meir and Chachamim about the same issue of a declaration and can he be chozer. And now we're talking about a shvua. And one litigant says to the other, you know what, you don't have to take a shvua. I'll let you off the hook easy. Just say the words, Dar li b'chaye roshcha. Now the Gemara quotes Rav Dimi, which we did yesterday. I just quickly review the Chiddush of Rav Dimi. There's a major machlokas here, how to interpret Rav Dimi between Rashi and Tosfos. We're going to take the approach of Rashi right now. And we're talking about Rabbi Meir. Rav Dimi wants to tell us a Chiddush in Rav Meir, that even in a case where the basic makeup of the Beis Din, that means two out of the three of the judges, are viable, are qualified, they're not krovim, they're experts in the law. So you have the basic, shall we say, the bones, the bare bones of a Beis Din. We're missing that third judge. And you would think, if not for Rav Dimi, that Rabbi Meir would agree that if the litigant accepts that third judge, that acceptance is a full-fledged acceptance with what we call a smichus das. He is absolutely committed to accept that third judge. And he's willing to overlook the technical psul and the fact that the third judge is a relative. And in this Havamina, Rabbi Meir would agree to Chachamim that in such a case he cannot be Chozer, because since his decision was an absolute, full-fledged decision, he had no hesitations, and he allowed this third judge, who's technically disqualified because he's a relative, to jump on board and complete the Beis Din. In such a case, even Rabbi Meir would agree that there's no room for Chazor, because it was an absolute, full-fledged decision. Kamash Malon, says Rav Dimi, no, even in this case where there were two judges that were kosher and the agreement on the part of, let's say, the defendant in this case was to accept a third judge who's not kosher, he's disqualified because he's a relative, even so Rav Meir says he can be chozerbo, he can change his mind, he can rescind and cancel his original agreement, because that commitment was a kind of an iffy commitment. You know, and now he wants to say, well, I want three judges, I want a full-fledged Beis Din, and all three judges are qualified. Okay, where are we up to now? This is where we start today, yeah.
But Dorli is a neder.
Well, the word Dorli, etymologically, you're right, means neder, but in this context, it really means a shvur. I'll tell you why. Again, we're not learning the
second. Even stronger.
What do you say?
Even stronger. If it is a shvua, then why shouldn't it be accepted as full-fledged?
Because it's lacking two elements. Number one, it's lacking what's called nikitas chefetz, which means you have to open up the Aron Kodesh, you may even have to hold on to the Sefer Torah. And number two, it's lacking the name of Hashem. You have to take a shvua in the name of Hashem. You know, the Torah And the entire legal system of Choshen Mishpat is predicated on one premise. And you and I might question that premise. But the halacha says that a shvua is so severe, it's so scary. I mean, again, we don't really know of shvua today because we've never seen it done, actually. But the whole enterprise, the whole ceremony of a shvua is really meant to square, you know, if you pardon the phrase, and it's really a street phrase, you know, it's meant to scare the pants off you, pardon the expression. But it really is a scary business. I mean, you talk about Shem Hashem, it's up there in the Big Ten, what they call in English the Decalogue, and it's very severe. So if the Tovea, that's the plaintiff, says to the Nitba, he says, look, you don't have to take a Shvua, I'll let you get away with just taking this flimsy kind of superficial oath in which you say B'chai Roshi, then he's really letting the litigant off the hook. I mean, no one's afraid of that kind of shvu. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but I'm saying they're afraid of a real shvu. The Torah says that in the case of a person who takes that real shvu, you know, the full oath with all the trimmings, he would never lie, he would never perjure himself under oath. He would be telling the truth. But if the litigant, in this case the plaintiff, says to the defendant, I'm going to let you off the hook and you don't have to take an oath, you know, just take this kind of flimsy, what we call a shvua kal. Now, Jerry, you mentioned the word neder here, so I'm going to test you on this. What's the difference between a neder and a shvua? Not, I mean to publicly embarrass you here, but do you know the difference between a neder and a shvua?
Well, you mentioned that for the
Shvua,
you said Hashem,
etc. No. I'm not talking about that Shvua of Nikita Schefetz. I'm talking about the Shvua of B'chai Roshi. How is that different than a nether? Because again, you're right, from an etymological point of view, the translation of the word dar, and we discussed this yesterday, is nether. But in its context, we're not talking about a nether, we're talking about a shvua. What is different about a nether? I know, Asher, you know. Anybody else know? I just want to know if only one person. Go ahead, Asher, you.
Basically, a nether, or nether in the dove, is a nether on an object.
Correct.
It's an object.
Excellent. And this is, they say, the source for Abchaim. You know, Abchaim Brisker built a whole methodology of learning on one line in the Gemara. The Gemara says that at the beginning of the Dharm, the difference between a nether and a shvua is a neder is ka'osar cheftza alei, and a shvu is ka'osar nafshe ala cheftza, which means that a neder means you take an object and you say, I won't benefit from this object, that's called a neder, and a shvu says that I will do this, I will do that, I won't do this, I won't do that, and there he's talking about himself. So if he makes a shvu and he says, I never took money from you, or I swear I paid you back money, that's really a shvu, that's not a neder. But the word neder, colloquially, in terms of the way people use the language, is all-inclusive. It would include even a shvua. So in this particular case, the Mishnah is expressing a common case where a person says to the litigant, you know what, just take this neder. But he really means technically a shvua, but not the shvua with the, you know, the capital Hey, how you deal. So now where are we up to for today? We're up to Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel. So let's see if we could all find the place. We're on Daf Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, and we're about, I'd say, 8-9 lines up from the bottom. Anybody want to count them until you get to Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel 9? Okay. Now, Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel. You know, this morning we learned a little bit of chulin together, and the whole sugya that we did today for an hour, almost an hour, in chulin is all about Shmuel. The older I get, the more I see that Shas is like the signature on Shas is Shmuel. I mean, everything revolves around Shmuel. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel. Machlokes b'machulecha. I will be eting lecha divrei akol yochol lachser. So here, Avosai, for my own sake, for my own self, I need to write this on the board. The only problem is that although I find this, which is good, I need. All right, we'll try this. That's not the most sophisticated eraser, but if it works, it works.
There it is, right there.
Where is it? Yeah. To my left, to my right? Okay. So who can read the line of Shmuel here? Machlokes be? Can anybody read that out loud?
B'machlucha,
correct? B'machlucha. Okay. What's the next line?
Atena.
Somebody read that loud for me? Ruven, could you read that loud for me? Avaletin.
Avaletin lecha in Diver HaKol, Yochal Lachasur.
Yochal Lachasur, correct? Is that what it says? Yochal Lachasur? Okay, just saving me the hassle of having to turn my back and read it in song. Okay, so this is going to be, according to Shmuel, the subject of the Machlokes between Rabbi Meir, who says Yochal Lachasur Bo, and Chacham, who say Ein Yochal Lachasur Bo, it's going to be in the case of Machal Lecha. We'll try to explain that in a minute. But in another case, which is called Etein Lecha, Divrei HaKol, everybody agrees what? Ein Yochal Lachasur Bo. Yochal Lachasur Bo. Okay, good. Because later on we're going to switch it around. So let's get Shmuel. Now, before we get into the actual scenario and the nuances in the case and what case fits under Machal Lecha, what fits into Etein Lecha, let's just understand conceptually why Shmuel thinks that in the case of Etein Lecha, everybody, even the Chachamim, would agree Yochal Lachasur. And that's based on what we mentioned this concept yesterday, but we cannot overemphasize this concept. And that is Kinyan Dvarim. Okay, what's Kinyan Dvarim? Kinyan Dvarim means when I make an agreement to change the ownership over an object, over mammon, over something of value, but only bidvarim. Dvarim means with words. I make a verbal declaration that's going to have an impact on who gets this mammon, and I'm giving this mammon to you, in effect. But there was no kinyan, there was no formal action that would bind us to that commitment. It was only verbal. That's called a kinyan dvarim. And what that means is that if a person says, Etein Lecha, I'm going to give you a certain object or a certain value, that's Dvarim B'Alma. That's just words. If he didn't clinch that, if he didn't support that with a Maisa Kinyan, then it's not binding. It's a promise, and he would be a very honest person if he lived up to that promise, but, not everyone is so honest. And especially if he can rationalize in his mind and say, well, I didn't realize X, Y, and Z. Had I known all the facts on the ground, I never would have made that commitment. But in Dine Mamonos, in monetary law, in Choshen Mishpat, if there's a kinyan, if you actually do an objective kinyan, yesterday I gave the example of a ksuba, that when the chasson is mischayev to the ksuba, we take a kinyan from him. And that solidifies and objectifies the kinyan. It's no longer just dvarim. It's now a kinyan. And if there are two witnesses who can testify that they're kinyan, then there's no backs. There's no way that you can rescind that. So that if Etein Lecha means I commit myself to give you, then if there's only a verbal commitment, quote, Etein Lecha, but there was no kinyan, then everybody agrees, even the Chachamim, so claimed Shmuel, that Yochal Lachasur Bo. I made a commitment to you, but now I see I can't live up to that commitment. Or I made that commitment because I assumed X or Y, but now I see that it's not going to be X or Y, it's going to be Z, so I want to change my mind. Okay, did you make a kinyan? The answer is no. What was it? Only Dvarim. If it was only Dvarim, is everybody, even the Chacham, agree Yochal Lachasur Bo. Give a clap behind you if you don't mind. A clap. You're just a big clap. Oh, excellent. Okay. But there's something that is totally different in the world of Dini Momentus, and that's called Mechila. Mechila means that you owe me a debt, and I wipe off that debt. Now, this concept of mechila appears in two areas of halacha. One is in mammon, in monetary law, where I wipe off a debt. That's called mechila. And then we have a mechila in the moral, ethical world of Judaism, where you have wronged me, and I have a claim against you. I can't force you to pay any money in this case. But you say to me, you know, Rabbi Berzon, I shouldn't have done it. And I regret that I did it. And I could say, machulcha. Very interesting how the concept of mechila applies in the laws of tshuva and also in the laws of choshen mishpat of dini mamonos. Now, just like in the case of ethical law with regard to tshuva, if you ask me for mechila and I grant you mechila, that verbal statement is absolute binding. And now you no longer have a chiyuv as far as Bein Adam L'Chaveru and Tshuva is concerned. Again, you may have a chiyuv Bein Adam L'Makom, you have to ask Hashem for mechila. That's a different halacha. So too in Dini Mamonos, when a person says, I'm mochel a chiyuv, that very declaration is absolutely binding. And there's no retracting it. So the Shmuel says that I can understand the Chachamim very well, who say Eino Yochel Lachzer, but in the case of Mechila, but not in the case of Etein Lecha, because Etein Lecha means there was a verbal commitment to give money out of pocket to someone, and that verbal commitment is not binding, even according to the Chachamim, in a case of Etein Lecha, when a person makes a commitment and a declaration that he will give money out of pocket. Now, we have two questions that we have to address. Question number one is going to be, how to understand in the framework of Shmuel Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir is going to say that even in the case of Machul Lecha, Yachol Lachzer Bo. So again, if I had time, I would write here, under number one, Rabbi Meir says Yachol Lachzer Bo, and Chacham say Eina Yachol Lachzer Bo. Shmuel has given me ample understanding of the Chachamim of Eina Yachol Lachzer, because Mechila is binding. When somebody owes me a debt and I wipe off the debt is gone. That's through Mechila. I don't need a kinyan for that. We don't understand Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that even in Machul Lecha, he can backtrack. But we have another question, and this is first on our agenda. Where does Shmuel see in our Mishnah any discussion about, number one, Machul Lecha, and number two, Etein Lecha? You know, if I said it in a kind of a funny way, I would say I looked through the Mishnah and I did a word search. I looked for Machul Lecha, I looked for Etein Lecha, and guess what? I didn't find either of them. So how does Shmuel weave these concepts of Machul Lecha and Etein Lecha into our Mishnah? So the answer is as follows. We have the first case in our Mishnah, which is called Abba v'avicha u'shlosha roi baka, which means that the litigant accepts the decision of what we call psulim. Psulim means those who are disqualified. Oh. Shmuel identifies that as a case of etein lecha. What does that mean? Let's say, for example, the defendant, right, the nitba, we'll call him Shimon. Shimon says, I accept the decision of the non-kosher judge, you know, who's technically disqualified. He's my father, he's your father, he's a roi baker. And let's say at the end of the day, the decision, the verdict handed down, is that Shimon, the defendant, is guilty, so to speak. I don't mean guilty in an ethical sense, but that he has to pay. That means that Reuven claimed he had ample evidence to prove that Shimon owed him money. Let's say he took a loan and he never paid back the loan. And a decision was handed down in favor of Reuven against Shimon that he has to pay for this loan. That there's a chiyuv on the loan. Correct? And in such a case, which judges decided that Shimon have to pay. Well, two of them were ksherim, but the third one was technically disqualified. He was a kara. Shimon committed himself to accept the decision of these three judges. Okay? So in that case, what we have is etein lecha. Why is that etein lecha? Because Shimon technically does not have to pay. Why doesn't Shimon have to pay? Who was the third judge?
Karo.
He was a Karo. But Shimon made a statement, I'm going to accept the decision of that judge. That means that he is committing himself to pay when he doesn't have to pay. Says Shmuel, that's a case of etein lecha. Now let's fast forward to the Sefer of our Mishnah. Reuven says to Shimon that if you are obligated to take a shvuah, and when I say a shvuah, I mean the real McCoy, the whole 9 yards, you know, it's with Nikitas Chefetz, and it's also with Shem Hashem. And Reuven says to Shimon, you know what? I'm going to let you off the hook. You don't have to take the shvuah. In such a case, does Shimon owe the money to Reuven according to the law? Shimon is not taking a shvuah. And the Torah says that if you X, Y, Z, let's say you admit to half, whatever the case may be, and you don't take the shvuah, then you have to pay. And yet Reuven is saying to Shimon, I'm going to let you off the hook. You don't have to take that shvuah. So basically Reuven is saying to Shimon, you don't have to pay. When really, according to the strict letter of the law, he does have to pay. What's that called? Is that called etei lecha?
No,
that's called machu. Says Shmuel, the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is going to be in a case of machu. But here's where the Chachamim say, well, since the Tovea, we'll call him Reuven, said to Shimon, you don't have to pay me, and I'm going to let you off the hook without a shvuah, that becomes machlucha. Say the chachamim, in such a case, there's no room for chazara. Because machlucha, as we discussed earlier, is binding. The Torah recognizes mechila to wipe off a chiyuv. So that Shimon, really, until he takes the shvuah, is believed to owe the loan. That's a chov. Reuven alleviates Shimon of his responsibility to take that oath. And therefore, he basically says, you don't have to pay me the loan. When you say to a person, you don't have to pay me a loan, that's called what? Mechila, that's machalucha. And the Chachamim insist in this case, Eino yachal achzor bo, because mechila is binding. Again, we're still stuck with that second question, namely, where does Rabbi Meir fit into this equation, Asher?
Okay.
Yeah, so far so good. Again, we're not there yet, believe it.
But he doesn't owe the money until Gemara Din. Oh.
Correct.
And therefore the machalacha,
it's a conditional mechila. It's a mechila that says the following. That
if the
Beis Din will issue a verdict that you have to pay me in the absence of a shvuah, you don't have to pay me. That's called machalacha. And here's where the Chachamim stand up and they say there's no room for chazar, because mechila is binding. However, now we've got to get to the case of etein lecha. And yeah, go ahead.
Just because he says you don't have to take shvuah, that it's a mechila?
Well, you have to go back a little bit. You're right. It doesn't sound like a mechila, but it's a mechila because of the following. The law is, and this you have to write down, again, we're going to have a lot of discussion about this, that if a person is obligated to take an oath, then he has to pay. What does that mean, he has to pay? It means until he takes the oath, he's obligated to pay. We believe that he owes the money. What's going to turn the apple cart upside down is if he takes the shvuah. If he doesn't take the shvuah, we believe he owes the money. And the reason why he's not taking the shvuah is because he's afraid to plagiarize himself under oath with the name of God and holding on to a sefer Torah. So really, he's obligated. The evidence on the ground before the shvuah is taken would indicate that he does owe this money. Okay. It's only when he takes the shvuah That's when he convinces the you know, the eyes of the judges are so impressed by his shvuah that therefore they believe that he paid up the chov or whatever it is. But until he takes in the absence of the shvuah, we believe that he owes the money. So if the litigant, in this case Reuven, says to him, you don't have to take the oath, basically he's being mochel the chov, and he's saying to him, look, I'm gonna be a very nice guy about it. And under the following conditions, which the Torah doesn't recognize, I'm going to let you off the hook and you don't have to pay me off this chov. That could be machal chov. Now that's that. Okay, I got myself a little confused. Just one second. Sorry. Let me get the mathematics here. Okay. We have two cases. One is the case where he's etting lechov, and this is the case of machal chov. Correct. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm missing something. If he is required to take the shvuah,
right,
in spite of the fact that the evidence is overwhelming that he owes the money, he takes the shvuah, he's off the hook.
Right.
But if the litigant says to him, okay, you don't have to take the shvuah, my question then is, what if the evidence still turns out to be overwhelmingly that he owes the money? He's still off the hook?
No. We're focusing now on a stalemate situation. What do I mean by stalemate? All the evidence is in.
Okay.
And based on that evidence, we really believe that there's reason to say that there's an outstanding loan and the defendant, Shimon, has to pay.
Yeah.
And we're going to change that after he takes the shvuah. Comes along Reuven, the plaintiff, and he says, you know what, you don't have to take the shvuah.
Okay.
In that case, we have a mechila. And that's the sefer, the second case in our Mishnah. And the Chachomim say in that case,
regardless of the evidence,
even though the evidence indicates that he has to pay and he didn't take the shvuah, machalucha. Machalucha means, I'm going to let you off the hook, you don't have to pay the chov, even though we have ample evidence that would lead us to the conclusion that you have to pay the chov.
Okay.
Then we have the case of etein lecha. Where's the case of etein lecha? Here we're going to turn the tables back to Shimon. Shimon is making a statement to the effect that if the judge, who's now disqualified, right, because he's a karov, will paskin, right, he'll hand down the verdict that I have to pay. Now, according to strict letter of the law, would he have to pay, Rabosa?
No,
because you don't have a vested here. The third member of the court is possible. And he says, this is again the Shimon, the defendant, says, I'm willing to pay. That becomes what? That becomes etein lecha. Etein lecha means, I'm going to take money out of my pocket that I really don't have to pay you, and I'm going to pay you. The decision of this court is not legally binding because, again, the third judge is disqualified.
But he accepted it.
That's called etein lecha. Comes along Shmuel and he says, in this case, even the Chachamim would agree that yachalasim. This means derei kol, meaning even the Chacham, everybody agrees that yachalak. So why? Because as we said at the outset, that's called diburim, with varim. That's only a verbal commitment to pay money. So that the defendant, in this case Shimon, is making a verbal commitment that he'll pay if the so-called judges, who one of whom is certainly not kosher, will decide that he has to pay. He's going to write out a check, he's digging into his pocket, and he's paying for something that he doesn't have to pay for, according to the strict letter of the law. That kind of commitment comes under etein lecha, because the defendant is saying, I will pay you even though I don't have to pay you. And such a commitment, even according to the Chachamim, is not binding. Why is it not binding? Because etein lecha is a kinyan dvarim bi'alma, it's only words. And it was not backed up by any sort of formal objective kinyan. Now, we're up to the next question now. I understand Shmuel in broad terms. I understand his conceptual distinction between machal lecha, where the Chachamim say ein yachal lachzer bo, and etein lecha, where even the Chachamim agreed to Rabbi Meir yachal lachzer. Well, that much I understand. But what I don't understand is how to work this into the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah records a machlokas in both cases. In case number one, where the litigants accepted a disqualified judge, and in case number two, where the Toveya says to the Nitba, you don't have to take the Shvua. So if the Mishnah is recording a double machlokes in both the Reisha and the Seifa, how is Shmuel going to support that? We just came to the conclusion that the Reisha is a case of Etein Lucha, and Shmuel just told us that in Etein Lucha everybody agrees, even the Chachamim say Yochel Lachzor. So how are we going to work this all out? Okay. So that I'm going to explain this Gemara now in the light of Rashi Divra Maskel B'Mochel Lecha. Okay, let's take a look at this Rashi. It's on Daf Chav Dalet Amud Aleph. And it is, shall we say, 10 lines up from the bottom, Be'erach. When I say 10, I mean just, I'm rounding it off without counting. Okay, B'Mochel Lecha. Itoveya omar lenitba neman alai abba o avicha im yizakuch yehei mochulcha hasam ka omar rabbanon eno yochel lachzavot hazocha ze b'mashe b'yodo mikevon sheyotza zakai. Now here's what Rashi is achieving, a tremendous goal. Rashi says that even the Reisha is Machul Lecha. Why is that so? The Reisha is Neman Alai Abba. They accept a judge who's not qualified. So Rashi says, let's look at the perspective of Reuven in this case. Reuven says that if the judge, right, with, we have three judges, but I mean to say, together with that third judge who is technically disqualified, he's a Karo, if they hand down a decision that you don't have to pay, what word can anybody help me here with the English? What word?
Absolved.
Absolved? Yeah, I don't want to use the word exonerated or vindicated, because we're not really talking about criminal law now. We're talking about monetary law. But if they decide, again,
I'm released,
absolved. If they release you or absolve you from any obligation, I will drop my case against you. Rashi says that's called machol lecha. And that's going to be the case where the Chachamim in the Reisha are going to say that Eino Yochel Lachzor Bo. That once he, meaning Reuven, the plaintiff, says, I will drop my case against you, that's called Mechila. Why? Because Reuven says, you owe me money, but I'm going to drop the case. If Reuven is saying A, from one side of his mouth, he's saying you owe me the thousand dinarim of the loan. But from the other side of his mouth says, I'm going to drop the case against you, which means I won't collect the thousand dinarim. What is that, says Rashi? Is that etein lecha? I'm going to give you money out of pocket, or is that mechila? I'm relieving you of an obligation. It's machol lecha. Aval etein lecha, says Rashi, even in the Reisha we have a case of Etein Lecha. Why? Because Shimon made a statement that I will accept the Karov, the non-kosher Dayan. Now, in this case, Shimon is going to pay out of pocket, even though the decision was made by a Karov, which means that technically, according to Halacha, he doesn't have to pay, and yet he's willing to pay. That's a case of Etein Lecha. Why? Because Shimon is going to pay even though he doesn't have to pay. Do you follow? In the case of the two litigants who agree to accept Abba, there is a perspective of the Toveya, there's and a perspective of the Nitba. From the Toveya's perspective, we're talking about Mechila. From the Nitba's perspective, we're talking about a Nesina of Etein Lecha. Comes along Shmuel and he says that the only machlokas about chazara is with regard to mechila, meaning with regard to the tovea. If the tovea wants to back out of his declaration, his commitment, then the Rabbanan say he cannot back out, because what the Tovea is saying to the Nitba is, I'm going to drop my claim against you, even though technically I have a great claim against you and you really owe me money. That's called Mechila. But in the case of the Nitba, meaning if the Nitba comes forward and he says, I want to rescind my original commitment, I don't want to accept this judgment based on a Dayan who's a Karov and he's disqualified, then in this case, even the Chachamim agree that the Nitba has the right to rescind his original agreement. Why? Because that's not called what? Mechila, that's called Eten Lecha. So let's write this on the board. Okay, Rashi is really amazing here, because without Rashi, I don't know if we would have gotten to square one here in this Gemara. Rashi is saying that we have to differentiate between the Tovea. Again, please write down the word plaintiff if that helps you. I call it a Tovea, okay? And the Nitba. The Nitba in fancy English is called a defendant. So this is what we call Reuven the Tovea, and this is who we call Shimon the Nitba. And here's where Shmuel steps up to the plate and he says the following, that when do the Chachamim say Eino Yochel Lachzor Bo? That's only as far as, just one second, as far as the Nitba is concerned. Well, just one second. When do they say Eino Yochel Lachzor Bo? Oh, that's as far as the Tovea is concerned. Why? Because the Tovea equals Mechila. The Nitba is Eten. Okay? Let's see if we can understand that once again. If the Tovea says, I'm going to drop my claim against you, which means that you owe me money, but I'm going to drop my claim, that's called Mechila. Why? Because you owe me money and I'm going to drop that. You don't have to pay me. That's called Mechila. And here's where the Chachamim insist that Mechila is binding and is no backs. But as far as the Nitba is concerned, the Chachamim agree that he can rescind his original declaration, his original commitment. Why? Because that's already Etei Lecha. The Chacham agree that Etei Lecha, when the Nitba says, I'm going to pay you even though I don't have to pay you, that means he's taking out his checkbook and he's writing a check. In such a case, the Chacham agree that Yochel Lachzor Bo. Now what we're going to do is, we're going to take the exact same structure in which we distinguish between the Tovea and the Nitba, and we're going to superimpose it on the Sefer in the case of Shmuah. And we're going to say the following, that really in the case of Shmuah, the Nitba has to pay. The Tovea, by saying, you know what, I'm going to let you off the hook and you don't have to pay me, even though you're not taking the real Shmuah, the real Makoy Shmuah, that's called what? That's called Mechila. And once again, the Tovea is being Mochel. He has rights to claim, because the Nitba in this case is not taking the Shmuah, the real Shmuah. And he gives up on his rights to collect that money. That's called Mechila. And the Chacham say Mechila is binding and there's no Chazara. But in the case of the Nitba says the following. So let's just see. In the case of Shmuah, is there a Nitba here which he says... So that's more complicated. That's going to come in the next sugya. That's called the Shvuas Nishba Minotel. I'll just say very quickly, but I don't want anyone to get confused here, so just close your ears. But later we're going to have a case where the Tovea could only get rights to claim the money if he, the Tovea, takes a Shvua. And the Nitba says to him, I'm going to let you off the hook and I'm going to pay you out of pocket even if you don't take a Shvua. That's going to be a case where the Nitba is offering Etein Lecha. And according to Shmuel, the Chachamim would agree that in such a case the Nitba could back down from his commitment, and he could say, no, you have to take a full-fledged Shvua. Okay, that's futuristic. That's called the Shvuas Nishba Minotel. We're not up to that yet. Okay. Oh. Where are we holding, Rabbi Osei? Are we... no? Nothing? Zero?
So we still don't know why.
This is the kind of shiur that you have to go over 50 times. So there's just no.
We still don't understand Rabbi Meir.
Correct. We still don't understand Rabbi Meir. But again, we understand that according to Shmuel, the Chachamim will make a distinction between the Tovea and the Nitba. Why? Because the Tovea is always going to be Mechila, and the Nitba is always going to be Nesina. And the Chachamim are going to insist that there's no Chazor in the case of Mechila. So as far as the Tovea is concerned, there's no backing out. Why? Because Mechila is binding in and of itself. Even Dvarim, even though it wasn't backed up by any sort of formal kinyan. As far as the Nitba is concerned, who's willing to pay out of pocket, that's already called Ete Lecha. Ete Lecha is a very flimsy kind of commitment, and it needs a kinyan, and without a kinyan, even the Chacham agree that Yochel Lots. So let's read it inside. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mashmuel, Machlokes, meaning the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is b'machulcha, is in a case where the Tovea says to the Nitba, I'm going to accept the verdict of this non-qualified judge, and therefore if they find you guiltless, or if they absolve you, or what was the word we used, if they
release
you, then I'm mochel you. And here's where the Chachamim stand up and say, once you gave a mechila, Mr. Tovea, there's no backs on a mechila. Avol bi etein lecha. If we look at, shift our emphasis from the Tovea to the Nitba, and the Nitba is saying to the Tovea that I will pay you even though I don't have to pay you, meaning if the judges find me... so now I need your English here. What's the opposite of released or absolved?
Responsible.
Obligated, responsible. Okay, if they find me obligated that I have to pay, then I'm going to pay, even though I don't have to pay. Why don't I have to pay? Because who is the third judge? He is a Kara. Never in such a case, Divrei HaKol, according to Shmuel, even the Chachamim would agree to Rabbi Meir that Yochel Lachzer. But why? Because that's only a kinyan dvarim bi'alma. He made a statement that he's going to pay money when he doesn't have to pay, and that's a flimsy kind of iffy commitment, and he can be chozer bo from such a commitment. All that is Shmuel. So again, if I test you on this, it's a 50% chance you get the right answer. I'm going to ask you whether it's the Tovea or the Nitba. According to Shmuel, vis-a-vis whom would the Chachamim agree that Yochel Lachzer Bo? Is it the Tovea or the Nitba?
Nitba?
The Nitba, excellent. And now I'm going to ask you the flip side of the question, which for sure you'll get right. Vis-a-vis whom do the Chacham insist that Eino Yochel Lachzer Bo?
The Tovea.
Why? The Tovea is a case of Mechila, and the Nitba is a case of Nesina. The Tovea is dropping his claim, that's called Mechila, and the Nitba is saying, I'm going to write you a check and pay you when I don't have to pay you. That's called Etei Lecha. And Etei Lecha, says Shmuel, even the Chacham would agree, Yochel Lachzer Bo, because that's a Kenyan Dvar.
If the Tovea is ready to be moichel, to give up his claim.
Yeah.
Why did he bother to go to Bezdin?
No. He really thought that Bezdin is going to find ample evidence. Just one second. Let me just go through the case again. The Tovea is saying to the Nitba. Yeah. He really thought initially that the Bezdin is going to come to the conclusion that the Nitba, there's enough evidence, right? The Tovea is the one who's carrying the evidence in his back pocket. He thinks he has ample evidence. He's got a full bag of documents that the Bezdin has certainly come to the conclusion that the Nitba has to pay him. But then, as the story unfolds, meaning as the judgment and the adjudication develops from stage to stage, he begins to see that he's not sure about it. Correct? He's not sure about it. So now at this point, he's looking for a way out. So he says, you know what? I rescind my original commitment, cross it out. I want three good judges. You know what I mean? Now again, could it be that he suspects that since they accepted the father of the Nitba, therefore the father of the Nitba is inclined towards his son? I don't know. Again, you can imagine all sorts of... You could write yourself a novel about this, you know, a comic book. You know, you could write what's going through the mind of the Tovea. But at some point he realizes that, you know what, I was being a little bit too magnanimous here when I said to the Nitba that if the sock goes in your direction, that you don't have to pay me, and I'm going to accept this judgment. At some point he realizes, hey, the winds are going the other way. The winds are blowing against him rather than for him. So he was very magnanimous when he accepted this non-qualified judge, but he was thinking that the weight of the evidence is so heavy in his favor that certainly these three judges, including the judge who's possible, are going to say the Nitba has to pay.
Is that kind of thing, like there's a preliminary hearing with that, the great experts, and they bring their evidence and they talk about it, and sometimes they'll say, we're not going to take this case further. And if they say they're going to take it further, the defendant still says, okay, then I want my regular trial anyways. But if they're not going to take it further, the one who brought up the charges is done with.
So Steve, I just want to make one comment here. Let's shift to the Tovea here. So in the preliminary hearing that you're describing, it seems that there's a lot of evidence in favor of handing down a decision that the defendant will have to pay.
Right.
So in such a case, if the defendant comes forward and he says, well, I want to present the candidacy of this person as the third judge, the Tovea, because he sees in the preliminary hearing that the evidence is weighing in towards him, he has this laid back attitude. You know, he's willing to say, let's. But then, as the story develops in the Beis Din itself, he realizes that, you know what, this third judge is somehow inclining the judgment, and he's professing, you know, the defense opinion, and he's showing that the evidence is not conclusive. At that point, he says, the Tovea, Mr. Reuven, says, you know what, I'm out of here. This is not a fair judgment. I want the real McCoy judgment. And the Chachom say, I'm sorry, sir, too late. Why? Because you were mochel already. You already gave up on your claim. And that's called a mechila. Rabbi Meir doesn't see it such. Rabbi Meir sees he's not giving up on his claim. And Rabbi Meir thinks that his statement that he might give up on his claim and he might accept this is all iffy. And he really didn't make a solid mechila. It's what you call a mechila betos. Like, let's say, for example, you come to me and you say to me, I borrowed 100. Would you be mochel on 100? And I give you mechila. Then I find out that it wasn't 100, it was 200. Well, let's say you said you spoke Lashon Hara against me, but I didn't know you defamed me in the newspaper. You know, so I gave you mechila, you know, based on what I thought was the nature of the crime. And then I find out. So that's called a mechila betos. So Rabbi Meir is going to go deep into the psychology of a person, in this case the Tovea, and he's going to say that when the Tovea said I would drop my claim if, he really didn't think that he was dropping his claim. And comes along with the Chachamim and they say, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to go into the psychology here, what were the assumptions, and then he saw, and he this and that. He made a statement, and that statement is a mechila, and the mechila is binding. Then we get to the Nitba, however. The Nitba is saying, Etei Lecha. The Nitba is saying, even in the absence of a reliable, binding decision on the part of a kosher Beis Din, I'm going to pay you based on some flimsy Beis Din, which is made up of three rohi baka. No, the third, the diet is my father or your father. Then that's etei lecha. That means that the Nitba is saying, I'm going to pay you out of pocket. That's not binding, even according to the Chacham. That is Shmuel. Now, if we worked hard to understand Shmuel, now we have to upset the apple cart, because Rabbi Yochanan says, "Be etein lecha machlokes," and Rabbi Yochanan is going to shift our entire focus here to the Nitba, and that's where we're going to have machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. And somehow the Chachamim are going to say that even though it's etein lecha, Nevertheless, Eino Yochel Latzer Bo, and that's really upsetting because we worked so hard to understand Shmuel that, you know, I couldn't be a fair judge in this case because I have vested interest in Shmuel because I worked very, very hard to understand Shmuel. And Shmuel held that Machalacha is binding. Comes along Rabbi Yochanan and he says, you know what? Machalacha is binding. And even Rabbi Meir would agree that Machalacha is binding. When did Rabbi Meir disagree in the case of Etein Lecha? Now who becomes the difficult Shita, Rabbi Osai? If we had to work overtime according to Shmuel to explain Rabbi Meir, now according to Rabbi Yochanan, we're going to have to work overtime to justify the Chachamim. Why? Because the Chachamim are going to say that even in the case of Etein Lecha, where the Nitba says, I'm going to pay you even though I don't have to pay you, Eino Yochel Lachzor Bo. But the truth is that Rabbi Yochanan never went that far. If you take a look at the language of Rabbi Yochanan and you read it meticulously, he said, Etein Lecha Machlokes. Now, what that might mean is that he's turning to Shmuel, and Shmuel was the one who said that in Etein Lecha, even the Chachamim agree that Yochel Lachzor Bo. That's where Rabbi Yochanan puts his foot down, and he says, no, even in the case of Etein Lecha, Eino Yochel Lachzor Bo. Ibailahu, the Gemara says, we don't understand Rabbi Yochanan. But what did Rabbi Yochanan mean when he said, quote unquote, be etein lecha machlokas? Does he mean that the machlokas is exclusively limited to be etein lecha? Avol b'machol lecha, divrei akol, even Rabbi Meir would agree, eino yochel lachzor bo, because Rabbi Meir accepts the fundamental principle that mechila is mechila, mechila is binding, even if it's only a declaration. Oh, Dilma, maybe what Rabbi Meir meant was he was in agreement with Shmuel that the machlokas is going to be on the case of machalacha, but he's adding etein lecha, where Shmuel said that in etein lecha, even the chacham agree that yochel lachzor bo, comes along Rabbi Yochanan, he puts his foot down and he says, no, even in the case of etein lecha, the chachamim are going to still insist that eino yochel lachzor bo. Odilma says the Gemara, bein bezu machlokes. Which again, now we have two chidushim if we go with the second pshat of Odilma in Rabbi Yochanan. Number one, it's going to turn out that Rabbi Meir is going to argue against the Chachamim and allow for Chazor, recognize the validity of Chazorah in the case of Mochulacha. And that's a Gevaldige Chiddush because, in the case of Mochulacha, why would Rabbi Meir say Eino Yochel Lachzor Bo? Okay, I'm sorry, why would Rabbi Meir say Yochel Lachzor Bo? Sorry. But we had that already in Shmuel because Shmuel said that the Machlokas was in the case of Mochulacha. But now we're saying that the Machlokas is not only in Machalacha, but it's even in the case of Etein Lecha, which means that the Chachamim are going to claim that Eino Yochel Lachzor Bo in the case of Etein Lecha. So it works out like this, that according to the second Tzad in Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Meir is difficult. We don't understand why he allows and recognizes Chazor in the case of Machalacha, which is the Tovea. And in the case of Etein Lecha, which is the Nitba, we don't understand the Shita of the Chachamim. Why is it that Chachamim say it's valid in such a way that Eino Yochel Lachzor Bo? After all, Etein Lecha is only as we said before, a Kinyan Dvarim. It was a pledge and a promise, but a person could always back down from his promises. So if we're going with the Odilma, Bein Bezu Machlokas, and we have some sort of fundamental Machlokas here about whether in general declarations in the context of a court case are absolutely binding. And a man is not, you know, once you take a position on this, whether it's Rabbeinu that says it's not binding and Chacham say it is binding, it makes no difference whether it's the Tovea and it's a case of Mechila or it's the Nitba and it's a case of Etein Lecha. Both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim are going to take their Shita to the end, you know, to the as an absolute Shita. Rabbi Meir is going to say Yochel Lachzor Bo. In other words, we're going to enter into the psychology of a person. We're going to say, well, yeah, he thought and he made and there was assumptions on his part, but that's not binding. And now he can convince us that he wants a real Bezdin. And that's Rabbi Meir, even in the case of machulacha, meaning even in the case of the tovea who promised, who committed himself to drop his claim, he can now change his mind and give us a whole song and dance as to why he made that declaration that he would drop his claim and he's no longer of that same mindset. And that's going to be Rabbi Meir. And the Chachamim are going to say, well, even in a case of etein lecha, which means that the nitba says, I'm going to pay you, even though the Bezdin is not a valid Bezdin technically, that commitment to pay someone is binding. Absolutely binding. Any yochel lachzor. And that's the most difficult point in this whole sugya. That according to Rabbi Yochanan, be etein lecha machlokes, which means that the Chachamim say that even in the Nitva's case, when he says, I'll pay you out of pocket, that's absolutely binding and he cannot change his mind. Why is that different from a Kinyan Dvarim? So I just want to, as we close for the day, I just want to throw out one svara that crosses my mind. I don't know if it's valid or not. And I want to say the following. That according to Rabbi Yochanan, in the Shita of the Chachamim, again, Rabbi Meir says Yochel Lachzerbo, he just made statements, and even in the case of Mechila, Yochel Lachzerbo. But I want to focus on the Chachamim in the case of Etein Lecha. And I think it goes like this, that if I were to stand up on one day, you know, one sunny or cloudy day, and say, I'm going to pay you $1,000, then surely Rabbi Yochanan would agree that Yochel Lachzerbo. Everybody would agree that Yochel Lachzerbo. But in a case of a Bezdin, where there is evidence that perhaps he owes this $1,000, he's not just out of the goodness of his heart making a statement on a certain sunny day, I'm going to pay you $1,000 gratis. But there is evidence to that effect. The evidence may or may not be conclusive, but it's serious enough that there's a lawsuit here that comes in front of the courts, and the litigants agree on who will adjudicate the case. The Chachamim say that in this case, it's not etein lecha. It's not that he's saying, I'm going to pay out of pocket. What is he saying? Anybody with me here, or did I lose you? Can anybody save me?
He's saying it's a valid court.
Exactly. Steve Schoen, thanks. It's not that he's saying I'm paying you out of pocket. He's saying that I recognize this court. Now again, how that works, I don't know. But I think the underlying premise of the Chacham, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is that you, as a litigant, have a right to decide who your judges are. Now, I say, I don't know how that works, because if you go back to our Mishnah, then the Chachamim say, Zeh borer lo echad, v'zeh borer lo echad. And what does it say in the Mishnah? How do they decide on the third judge? Right? We're going back to Chav Gimel, Amin Aleph. No, I'm talking about the Chachamim's opinion. Correct? Let's go back to the Chachamim. The Chacham against Rabbi Meir say, Shnei Dayanim Borim Lahem Od Echad. Which means that the authority is vested in the hands of the two Dayanim, each one was chosen respectively by one of the litigants, to decide who their third buddy is going to be. But somehow, even though it's the judges who will finally decide, but they will decide based on the decision of the litigants. Meaning they are here not to really, authorize the third dayan, but rather to la'asher, how do you say that in English, to give their approval,
legitimize
the decision of the two litigants. Now, what that means is that the third judge is really not necessarily appointed by the two judges. What I mean to say is the two judges have to approve, but the real authority lies in the hands of the litigants. I mean, Rabbi Meir goes even as far as to say is that the two judges have nothing to do with the decision on the third charge. Right. It'll be a joint decision of the two litigants. The Chachamim say no. But the Chachamim agree that although the final authority and the approval is vested in the hands of the two judges to accept the third judge, but nevertheless they are really in effect giving their agreement and their approval to the decisions of the two litigants. And the two litigants agree that this person can serve as the third judge. Bottom line, and this with this I want to leave you food for thought, and we'll see if we can develop this further tomorrow, is that according to Rabbi Yochanan in the Chachamim's frame of reference, what happens here is that in the case of Etein Lecha, it's not just that he's saying I'm going to take money out of my pocket, out of my bank account, and transfer it to your bank account. That for sure is Yochel Lachzer. But the Chacham saying to Yochel Lachzer, but once once the second litigant, we'll call him the defendant in this case, has given his approval to the third judge, now the Beis Din is really made up of three judges. So that the first two judges approve, according to the Chachamim, the joint approval or agreement of the first of the two litigants on the third judge, and now they give their final shtempel, they give their approval of that third judge. And basically, when the second litigant, we'll call him the defendant Shimon, agrees to accept Abba or Avicha, now we just need the first two Dayanim to give their approval, and we have a Beis Din. Once we have a Beis Din, we don't need Kinyanim. We said a Kinyan Dvarim is not binding, but that's only if we don't have a decision of a Beis Din. In the case of a decision of a Beis Din, we don't need Kinyanim, except for Pshara. But with the exception of Pshara, Beis Din hands down the decision. All right, Rabosai, we'll stop here. If anyone's around at 10:30,